In episode 9 of The Composter, I sit down with Scott Howarth from the Sinclair Group for a conversation I never quite imagined I'd be having in real life. Last September, I found myself in a friendly conversation with the stranger sitting next to me. We were chatting away when I suddenly realized that this stranger, Scott, played a role in developing what many composters consider their greatest nemesis, the fruit sticker. 40 billion stickers a year are made by the Sinclair Group, where Scott does research and development. For decades, I've been having imaginary conversations with Scott, although I didn't know that was his name. So many compost gripe sessions over the last 15 or so years have circled back to those tiny little stickers. Finding them in finished compost, trying and usually failing to teach people to remove them, knowing there's no practical way to screen them out once they're in the system. So this episode felt like a rare opportunity to sit down, ask the questions, and get to the root of it all. We talk about how fruit stickers came to be, how labeling is evolving, and what the future could hold for compostable produce labeling. The future is looking bright, and Sinclair is at the forefront of the upcoming positive changes. There's legislation in New Zealand and Europe which will ban the plastic fruit stickers, and some companies, like the Kiwi company Zespri, are already choosing compostable stickers for their fruit. We are on the cusp of a true change. This conversation left me thinking about how much better the world might be if we all had more chances to sit down for real, thoughtful conversations with the people behind the systems. Especially the ones that create frustration and pain points in our daily lives. There's so much that can shift when we move from assumptions to understanding. Before we dive in, I also want to say thank you to this episode's sponsors, Green Mountain Technology, AgriLab Technologies, and Compost Capital Network, for supporting this show and the work of composters everywhere. This upcoming conversation is a conversation for every composter who's ever pulled a sticker out of a lovingly finished pile of compost. Welcome to The Composter, a podcast for compost lovers. Host and fellow composter Jane Murner. Through real conversations with composters and industry professionals, we are digging deep into the science, technology, and art of compost production. Whether you're managing a large-scale site or just compost curious, this podcast is here to inform, inspire, and connect us all as part of a growing movement to enliven the world's soils. Compost Capital Network brings together composters, haulers, and capital providers. It supports the next generation of composting infrastructure through educational events focused on financing and by facilitating connections. CCN is proudly sponsored by Laurel Mountain, Claire Vest, and Compost Now. CCN is an initiative of Wanu Organics, a consulting firm focused exclusively on composting and organics recycling. To join the network and learn more, please visit compostcapital.com. Green Mountain Technologies has been a leading composting technology firm since 1992. Our clients cover the spectrum of small farms, institutions, and resorts, along with the largest composting facilities in North America. From our Earthflow composter to ASP Technologies and compost turners, we offer solutions for every commercial composting opportunity. Visit compostingtechnology.com and mention the Composter Podcast for a free consultation. This summer, I visited Vermont Natural Ag Products, the home of Mudu Compost. One thing that really stood out was an innovative system from AgriLab Technologies that both speeds the compost process using aeration and captures thermal heat from the compost to warm the Mudu bagging barn. Ingenious. I reached out to Brian at AgriLab Technologies afterwards, and I'm thrilled to share that they now generously sponsor this podcast. AgriLab Technologies provides solutions for efficient composting. Their team works with farmers, commercial, institutional, and municipal composters to save energy, labor, and space on your site. Their modular compost aeration equipment and technical support services improves process control, making better compost faster, with less odor and impact. They can also capture renewable thermal energy from composting to heat nearby buildings, wash water, and for drying finished compost. Build your soil and burn less oil. Reach out to AgriLab Technologies today. Visit us at agrilabtech.com/podcast. All right, Scott, I'm so excited to talk to you today. Welcome to the Composter.
Well, thank you very much, Jenny. Looking forward to it as well.
Yeah. It was amazing. We sat next to each other at that BPI conference in the fall and started talking. And I never thought I'd be sitting next to someone who helped create the fruit sticker. It felt like this amazing serendipitous thing where I get to dig into the fruit sticker. It's the bane of the composter's existence. But
I know.
But what's happening to it? No worries. That's why we're here. We're gonna
That's
solve
right.
the world's problems one sticker at a time.
That's right.
So to start off, can you share a bit about your background, Sinclair, and your role there?
Okay. Yeah. Well, for me, I've been in the industry for a few years now, as you can probably tell from lack of hair and a little gray hair in my beard. But my education is all based in agricultural. I'm an agricultural engineer. And I started back, I guess, in the 80s and 90s. And I'm really kind of a geeky kind of guy. You know, I like technology and have worked in that area my entire career. I started with the Sinclair Group. It's a group of companies back in around 1994 and have been with the same company for now. This year it'll be 32 years, so for quite a while. Really, Sinclair, this is what we do. We do the fruit stickers. We manufacture those, but we also manufacture the equipment that applies the stickers to the fresh produce. And then we sell the labels, we lease the equipment, and part of that lease agreement is that we provide service to our customers. And you know, in your world, you don't really think about this, but the fruit guys, that's a perishable product. Mm-hmm. So they really rely on that service. If the labels are not able to go on the fruit, that means their fruit doesn't go to the marketplace. So we have to be there at a moment's notice to take care of our customers. And we do that very well. And fruit is coming off trees and their peppers, they're coming off the vines and things like that year round in different parts of the world. And we have offices and our printing presses in 8 locations around the world. So,
do you know the scale of how many stickers are produced in a year or even a week or something like that?
I'll just tell you, you know, I don't know what it is totally around the world, but I know for us, we do billions and billions of labels, around 40 to 50 billion every year.
And it's like, I can't even fathom that. Yeah,
I know. It's a lot. They're little, you know, they're little guys, but definitely understand why you guys have trouble with them. I remember going to my first BioCycle meeting. It was well over 10 years ago now. And I remember introducing myself to the community and being like all laser focused on me. And I was like, goodness, guys, I'm here to help. But that's where I started to learn about some of the issues you guys have with those.
Can you tell us why they were created? You're saying every farmer needs to have these. And how did you find yourself involved with their development at Sinclair?
Yeah, great question. So if you think, actually, we did some research recently into that kind of question. And I think the first produce label was created by Fife's, a banana, you know, the banana company, back in like 1900s, early 1900s. It was solely for branding, just branding. I always like to talk to our group and people who think about produce labels as it's kind of like we're kind of in 3.0 now. Mm-hmm. 1.0 was branding, all about branding. And 2.0 came about with the PLU numbers. That's those little numbers on the PLU stickers that really tell the retailers what it is, whether it's an apple or an orange or whatever. And that's used at point of sale to ring up your purchase. Then the next wave is really barcodes. And you see that, especially here in North America, thing called a data bar, which is a stacked barcode. And that is used for traceability. So that helps you trace back to the grower, or it's more the brand owner of that product.
Okay. Would that be like, we've heard of those spinach outbreaks where people get sick from eating greens at Chipotle or something. Would that track that or not necessarily?
it helps. It helps shortcut it. It gets it to the brand owner, and then the brand owner should know which farm it goes to. So, yeah, I mean, the spinach, that's a good example, because that was really tough. That's the kind of thing that gets it to that brand owner, whoever was responsible putting that on the market, and then they know what farms to trace it back a bit further to get specifically to that event.
Okay, so we've got 40 to 50 billion fruit stickers out there. Can you share the story you shared with me about visiting your professor going back to your alma mater?
Oh, yeah. So years ago, I went back. So back to myself again. Well, I did a PhD in agricultural engineering and did that at Texas A&M. And so I was fortunate enough to sponsor a research project with the university. So I went back to see the students present that their project. And that was a lot of fun. You know, I hadn't been back to the university in well over 10 years, and went back and got to meet with my major professor. And so he says, "Hey, Scott, let's go walk across campus and grab us a bite to eat at the student center." And so we start walking across the campus, and as you might do, he starts saying, "Hey, Scott, so what have you been up to? What are you doing these days?" And I just kind of started to gather my thoughts, and as you might do, I just looked down, and there on the ground was a little produce label. It was probably an apple label, and I just went, "Well, actually, that's what I've been working on." And I was really embarrassed, but also it was one of those moments in your life that you go, "Oh my God, that's a real problem." Mm. And I'm part of it. And so it was one of those aha moments where you go, we need to be working on that. And it was something that I took back to my team, and I'm not going to say that's what started all of our development, but it was definitely one of those moments when you go, yeah, this is an issue. We need to work on this.
I hear over and over again, people have these aha moments and it changes the trajectory of things. And I don't think we can stress enough paying attention to those feelings and those moments.
Feelings.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one that comes to mind is I love to hike. And I've been an avid hiker all my life, and I love hiking in the Sierras. And it's another one of those things. People who hike, they love fruit. And by gosh, I'll hike up to the top of Yosemite Falls, and I'll be picking up labels the whole way. It's bad that the people that are hiking are throwing them away, but you know, I pick them up, I bring them back. I feel bad.
Yeah. So for anybody that's listening that's not a composter, it's a very, very common source of contamination. I have an account from a grocery store, and they send me crates of produce that's gone bad,
right?
Like avocados or bananas or something. It's a very noble thing to take that and turn it into an amazing product. But wow, it is hard when they don't remove the fruit sticker. And then at the end, you spent all this time and energy making this beautiful, life-giving soil amendment, and it has little bits of plastic from the fruit sticker. So I am all about the positivity and bringing this around and the solutions, and you are too. You've had this aha moment. Can you share with us what's happening globally and what you've been working on and what's happening at Sinclair?
Yeah, it's probably good to also let people know a little bit about why are they plastic? And I'm sure many of your listeners would say, "Dude, why are you doing this?" Unfortunately, or fortunately, or unfortunately, it's one of the best materials for produce labels. Paper labels is another one that we hear a lot about. And we do make paper labels for certain customers. The problem is that they do not make it through the supply chain from, and this is another one of those things that most people don't really realize what produce label goes through to make it through the supply chain and do all the great things that it does for you as a consumer, the retailer that's selling the fruit. It does serve a really great purpose. I mean, if you can just take apples, for example, and look at the array of apples that you can buy, and each one, Gala, Fuji, pick your favorite, has a different price point. And so if you didn't have that label, or let's say you want organic, how do you tell a organic from a non-organic apple? Unless it's segregated, you wouldn't know. So that gives the retailer a way to tell the difference and charge you for that. So these paper labels just do not do the job. They fall off, they get caught up in the equipment that's used to size the fruit and segregate it. It just has a tougher time of making it through that supply chain. And the supply chain can get wet. Paper labels will just break apart, as they would do in a compost, right?
Yeah.
They start to do their job. So really, we found that the plastic-based materials work the best to conform to the fruit surface and all that. I kind of wanted to explain that. That's how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of back to your question, what's the state? Well, many people might know that there's been a lot of regulations around the world that have looked at removing the plastic, kind of forcing our hand. I will say that we've been investigating materials that will compost for well over 20 years. Been a process to get it right. I would say these regulations, especially in Europe, New Zealand, and Australia, have really kind of pushed the industry to accept them. I will say that the earlier versions that we put on the market were not accepted at all. We had solutions that were industrial compostable, and our customers went, oh, that's good, and they just were not buying them. So the regulations, well, they were made of, you know, different types of materials. PLA was one of the materials.
Okay.
But there, for our application, it usually needs to be a blended, because PLA is pretty stiff. And so it on its own, it was not really the best solution for us. Regulations are kind of helping move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that we're not a super fan of that. We would rather see it happen organically, but I can also see where it does help really move the needle. So Europe is one of those areas where we're seeing a huge amount of growth in our product for that. If you think about fruit, fruit's kind of, it's grown everywhere, but it goes everywhere. I always like to say produce knows no borders. You know, it crosses borders. So that's why our latest development is really both home and industrial compostable.
Okay, so. Great. And I assume you were at the BPI conference with me. So is it BPI certified compostable?
No, not yet. That's a new thing, and we've got to work on that. But it has, I believe, all the standards. It'll meet all the standards, we believe. So we just have to work to get that. So it is currently certified by TÜV Austria for both home and industrial. And it's also certified by ABA, which is the Australian certification body. Theirs is a little bit more strict. They have an extra test you have to go through for earthworm survival. And so that should give you a little added comfort, even though it's not BPI at the moment. Yeah. We went after the markets that we knew that the product was going to be introduced into.
Okay. And you have to get ahead of the curve in these places where the legislation's changing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by AgriLab Technologies. Visit them at agrilabtech.com/podcast. And Compost Capital Network brings together composters, haulers, and capital providers. It supports the next generation of composting infrastructure through educational events focused on financing and by facilitating connections. CCN is proudly sponsored by Laurel Mountain, Claire Vest, and Compost Now. CCN is an initiative of Wanu Organics, a consulting firm focused exclusively on composting and organics recycling. To join the network and learn more, please visit compostcapital.com. And Green Mountain Technologies doesn't believe in one-size-fits-all solutions. We offer cutting-edge engineered composting solutions for large facilities and simple on-site solutions for farms, resorts, and institutions. Our consulting services include odor control solutions, operational planning, and permitting assistance, along with feedstock handling and recipe development. Visit compostingtechnology.com and mention the Composter Podcast for a free consultation. I want to say, too, like, composters are no higher or mightier, because a lot of us are bagging our compost at the end. in plastic bags because everything else biodegrades and we're all struggling. I'm hoping that what you're doing can help kick off something that will help our industry bag better or figure out that retail end better. But again, it's tough because it can't compost at the garden center. It needs to make it to people's homes and not cause a mess in there.
Yeah, same
Prius
thing.
Or something. Yeah.
We don't want it to compost along the way.
Yeah. So I didn't write this question down, but like I'm so curious what your day looks like as a researcher and developer. Are you? I'm picturing all these beakers and burners and bubbling things.
Well, yeah, mine's not quite like that anymore. My day has a lot to do with communication and interaction with a lot of our suppliers. Our big thing is we're converters, so we're like label makers, and so we will take the stock and then run it through our equipment, big printing presses, or well, they're not big, they're narrow web.
teeny.
They're 10 inches wide. So yeah, because we make the little labels. We have presses here at our facility in Fresno, California. We have three presses. We have another location up in Wenatchee, Washington, which has a few presses, and then different places around the world where these things are being made. So we work a lot with the resin suppliers, both on the plastic side and the what I like to call bioplastics. We work with them to understand the properties of those materials. Then we work with the what's called film blowers. They blow the film in a bubble, and the ones that do the plastic, like LDPE or PP, polypropylene, have the same kind of equipment that is used for blowing the bioplastic type resins. Now, I would say the better suppliers are the ones that blow the bioplastics all the time, because there can be, as you might imagine, some contamination, and that causes problems in the film, and it doesn't make it real clean. So the ones that are solely in that area, they do a much better job. It's a cleaner product and looks better and performs better. So I will go visit those places. That's the fun part about my job, and help them make sure that we're getting the right resins in and that the right temperatures, pressures, and all that good stuff, all the geeky stuff that I love to play around with, get that right. And then it comes into the next level of supply, and I will visit those that will then coat it with adhesives and our backing materials. And then it comes to us, and then we do a lot of testing in-house and then all the way through the chain, making sure that it runs on our equipment. So we do tons of testing.
Mm-hmm.
I did invite you out to see what we do. Maybe another time you can come visit. But When you actually are in a pack house and see these things running, and I would invite people to, we have a YouTube channel, check it out.
Yeah.
You can see how fast it goes. It's we're literally going up to like 12 a second.
Wow. I will put a link in the show notes to the YouTube clip of that.
Cool. Yeah. It's pretty impressive. Yeah.
And you mentioned when we were at the conference, why don't we do like a tattoo or something that washes off? You spoke to that a little bit.
Yeah. So, being in research and development, I look at all of that. And those are opportunities for us, I will say for sure. And so we've looked at all that. And one of the early projects that I worked on was using lasers. But we initially looked at laser marking the fruit itself, and we could do it. We figured out how. The problem with it is that it does cause a scarring of the outside surface of the fruit. And in some cases, that can allow bacteria and fungus and things like that to go into that scar and cause the fruit to basically, we would see early days, they would sink in. So it was losing moisture, but it was also causing either a bruise or a not so good place. You'd have to cut that out before you eat it.
Bummer.
So there's that. Now, I think USDA did look at it a little closer. They did allow it for citrus, which has a really thick skin.
Yeah.
But before you did the marking, or no, after you did the marking, you had to wax it. Now, in the U.S., we wax fruit anyway. That's not a problem. The problem was when you do that. as you're sorting fruit, usually you wash the fruit, you wax it, and then you sort it, and then you label it.
Okay.
So they would have to change their whole operation, and it is a tough deal. So, yeah. You know, that's the part on kind of what I call laser marking and tattooing. Mm-hmm. And there are some people that do it in Europe now, mm-hmm. and some other parts of the world. It's really a slow process, the lasers that are doing that. We ended up creating a machine that would laser mark our labels, and that worked pretty well, but it was very expensive. So the other, like wash off, mm-hmm. that's a cool thing. But where that had a problem was if you go into your supermarket, they've got the little rainmakers to keep the fruit hydrated. And so they wash off real easy.
Shoot.
That's really the problem. And it's not just that. That's just the easy visual thing that I can give you. But all through the supply chain, fruit is put in a cold chain. That cold chain can be broken, and when it does break, that fruit can sweat. So it has a little bit tougher time to make it through that supply chain.
Okay. So looking ahead, do you feel like we're close to having biodegradable fruit stickers in the U.S.?
Yeah, we have them. They're here now.
Okay.
Yeah, they're here. We're selling to some of our customers. The real issue is I would say for our customers that they are a little bit more expensive than the traditional labels. We have some of our customers are what I would call early adopters, but last year we made a pretty good push, and I would say we convinced maybe less than 5% of our customers. So it's an uphill battle.
Yeah. Is there any legislation happening in the U.S. to make those? You're in California, I imagine.
Yes.
I pictured that being there. We're slower a little bit sometimes.
Right.
In the New England states.
We're seeing some regulation. More I follow the EPR, right? EPR rules. And they're like, I think 7 states now. They're not specifically targeting, but what I'm hoping is that some of those regulations and the good work that BPI does to make people aware, and maybe that they give some credits to people who are using these, that because they're compostable, that they get a credit versus a charge that they have to pay into that EPR.
Just in case people don't know, actually in episode 8, we do talk a lot about extended producer responsibility, that EPR, and how important it's going to be for composters to pay attention to this. And it can help the whole industry if the fruit producers are able to purchase these biodegradable fruit stickers because of EPR. And yeah, it's an exciting prospect if we're paying attention and making sure that it's happening in the right way.
I think that would be a real benefit, is that the composting community get together and make sure that these EPR laws that are being passed include support for compostable products, and not just ours. It's really all of them, because if you got an industry, the more there is and the more acceptance there is, then it makes it easier. I mean, we're just a really very, very small part of it.
And the more that people are purchasing, I imagine the price will go down of producing.
Exactly.
You're
probably going to get to it in a minute, but you're probably going to ask me, what's next, Scott? You know, so.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. What's next, Scott?
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, that's a good segue right to it. And really, I think Sinclair, and I know our CEO is behind this, is that we would love to see that all of our labels are made from compostable products. We know that they work as well as the plastic labels. That was my job, to make them work as well.
Yeah.
And they do. And they do a great job. If we can convince more customers, there will be a tipping point where it goes from being a little bit more expensive to produce to about the same. When it hits that, we can just go full on, and we would do that because we realize how important this is really for the world.
It really is. Yeah.
So that's one of our goals is to make that happen. It's probably going to be a few years before that tipping point happens. But I will say, I mean, just to give you an idea, if you ask me what percentage of our materials were compostable 5 years ago, I would have said less than 5%, a few percentage points. Now it's around 25%.
Okay, that's great. Yeah.
So that shows some real movement. We have one of our largest customers in the world is Zespri. They are a brand that
the kiwis?
Ah, you go. Exactly.
Yeah, I love kiwis. Yeah.
So if you buy their kiwi fruit, 100% of their labels that they buy from us are compostable.
All right. I mean, these are things that I think this community would like to know so we can support those people that are, those companies that are doing that.
Buy Zestfree. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Wow. All right. We're actually on the last question, but we're not in a rush. So is there anything that you'd like to say directly to this composting community or just anything in general? I felt like that BPI conference that we went to, there was this incredible feeling of momentum that I left with, a real excitement. And I just... What do you want to say to us? Because we're all part of it together.
Yeah, I love going to that BPI summit because I always feel, and I think I mentioned to you, I feel like I'm with my people, you know?
Yeah.
That like-minded people that are really trying to move the needle and make things happen. And I know that we've been a thorn in your side. We're trying not to be that thorn, and we're working hard to do that. And I know we're not done. We will continue. I've been in R&D my whole life, and I love it. And I know that there's always something else to work on. And I think the other things that we're looking at is marine degradable, soil degradable, you know, just, you know, all those type of things. There's always something else that we can be working on, and we'll keep that in our sights. And we're not stopping. You know, we're going to try to push this. So we appreciate your support for this. I know some people would like to just see those labels go away, but they do a very important part in the whole supply chain. But we're there with you. So we think that if you think about it, I do. If I drive through the fields here in California, right now they're putting compost on. So I see it. We're really part of that full cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to see fields full of plastic. Yeah, I am seeing it in a lot of places. So we have a chance to correct this. And what an opportunity to get to sit down together, a composter and a fruit sticker, really anybody where you're finding your pain point and able to sit with it and talk through how to solve things and make the world better. So it's a real gift.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes. Super great. Yeah, chit-chatting with you.
Yeah,
you and too. I love some of the collateral you have on your website, and just learning about your family and how you do what you do. It's amazing, and
thanks.
I just wanted to push that out there as well.
It's an absolute pleasure for me. I just think I was born at the right time in the right place with the right people around, and I get to live my passion. So it's a gift to me. Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Scott. It's been an awesome conversation.
Well, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
As we wrap up this episode, I want to extend a sincere thank you to Scott Howarth from the Sinclair Group for being willing to sit down with me for this conversation, especially knowing that in the eyes of many composters, he might be seen as the bad guy. It takes courage and openness to step into that space, and I truly appreciate his willingness to listen, reflect, and engage honestly. If you'd like to learn more about what Scott and his team are working on, you can visit the Sinclair Group at sinclair-intl.com. Today's show is also generously sponsored by AgriLab Technologies, along with Green Mountain Technology and Compost Capital Network. Thank you all for supporting this podcast and the entire composting community. I also want to share a huge thank you to the people who make this show possible behind the scenes. Galen and Yasna Brown for all their support, Isadora Biggs for being a wonderful assistant, Pete Hamilton for editing these episodes, and of course, the great music of Soulshot. If you'd like to show your compost pride, be sure to check out our composter merch at the Earth Care Farm website, earthcarefarm.com. And as always, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me, your host, Jane Murner, at info@earthcarefarm.com or on Instagram at Composter Podcast. I'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about professional development in the compost industry with Carrie Oceans. Thank you so much for listening, you compost lovers.